This is Saturday evening, and I'm just wondering if there's some persons who are here that haven't been with us up until now, Saturday evening. Any new folks in the audience? Okay. We've been having a great time. We miss your association. Hope you come early next year. The topic we've been discussing is Sharanagati, the process of surrender to Krishna. And there's a subtopic is there's six angas or limbs, six components of surrender that are found in scripture. And we've been just going into that subject matter more deeply, more deeply, more deeply. So this evening, the topic that I'd like to speak about is impetus. There must be a plural for impetus. I don't know what it is. Impetus is. Impetus for surrender. So where does surrender begin, or what's something that can help us go further? The first evening, Thursday evening, we have a visiting devotee visiting us from San Diego. He's one of the principal editors for the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, and he's been doing it for close to 40 years. He's pretty experienced at what he's doing. And I'm sure you're all, those of you that have been with us, he's lots of fun, very happy devotee and good communicator. At the very beginning, we discussed the last instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, 1866, is the verse, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam, Sharanam, surrender. And as a continuation of that same message, which at least I've been repeating, this surrender is not something that once upon a time I surrendered and then I'm good. I can coast. I reached a plateau and just leveled off and not so. Progress, or if you're from Canada, it's progress, is necessary to continue in the process of surrender. I'm getting educated by our Canadian neighbors. It's an ongoing process. So he was using this metaphor of we're at the foothills and then there's a big mountain ahead. So we're beginning this surrender process, and so there's how it begins and how it continues. So that's the topic this evening, impetus for surrender. And I thought we'd begin with a nice verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which we can chant responsively. The essence of this is anything that may be an impetus comes from the representatives of Krishna, or the devotees of Krishna, or the sadhus. Sadhu Sangha is where we get the impetus for surrender. It's how it happened for all of us. Without, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for someone who was carrying bhakti within their heart. We just somehow or another bumped into them. And they spilled a little bhakti on us from their bhakti vessel. They just gave bhakti, some attraction for Krishna. So that's it. That's the core impetus from which all of the other ones, that's why I started with this one. The other ones are also very nice. This is a teaching given by Kapila Dev to Devahuti. She recognizes, this is chapter 25, the beginning of Devahuti's instruction. It's long series of chapters, a very large section of the Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev's instructions. But she wants to know, because her husband has gone, Karma Muni, now that they have a son, Kapila Dev, who is elder enough to care for Devahuti, so he's gone to the forest to continue his meditation activity. And she knows that her son will not be with her forever either. So how will she continue with her quality of devotion? So through devotee association. It's how we begin, it's how we continue, it's how we complete the surrender process through association of devotees. So let's read responsibly the verse. Satam prasangan mama virya samvidho. Bhavanti rit karna rasayana katha. Tajjo shanad ashvapavarga vartmani. Shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. Even if you don't know the meaning of the words, it sounds nice. There's alliteration and all kinds of ornaments of literature, literary ornaments. Let's do it again. Satam prasangan mama virya samvidho. Bhavanti rit karna rasayana katha. Taj joshanad ashvaka varga vartmani. Shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. So I'm going to read the translation that's found in the Bhagavatam, and it also appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 1. So I'll read both. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and to the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. What were we doing before it began? And then devotional service, real devotion and devotional service begin. What that means is real devotion is spontaneous devotion that's unmixed. And before then it's mixed. So real bhakti is pure, and what we're doing now is sadhana bhakti, where there's a mix. But by continuing in proper association with proper activity and sustained practice, that spontaneous devotion that's unmixed and pure will come, and then real devotion begins. Real devotion and devotional service begins. Here's the translation. It's Adi Lila chapter 1, text 60. Those of you that have your electronic devices, you like to look these things up. Translation. The spiritually powerful message of Godhead can be properly discussed only in a society of devotees, and it is greatly pleasing to hear in that association if one hears from those devotees The way of transcendental experience quickly opens to him, and gradually he attains a taste in knowledge that in due course develops into attraction and devotion. So the sequence at the bottom, Shraddha, Ratir, Bhaktir, Anukramishyati in sequence. Anukrama, following step by step, these different stages of bhakti unfold. So it starts, the impetus is getting the association of devotees somehow by good fortune. There's a phrase that's used by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It means somehow or other. The causeless mercy of devotee. Well, what's the cause of the causeless mercy of devotee? Well, there's no cause of causeless mercy. It's just somehow or other. Causeless mercy. Because devotees are merciful. But okay, devotees are merciful. Why is it that some persons get the association of devotees and others don't get the association of devotees? What's the cause? Well, it's causeless. Somehow or other. It's a mysterious event. So the same idea, this is Kapila Dev speaking to Devahuti, and there's another very similar passage from our texts. And does anybody recognize where this is? Of course it's India, but where in India? Varanasi. Where in Varanasi? Dashashvamedha Ghat. What's significant about Dashashvamedha Ghat at Varanasi? Huh? A little louder? Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were given transcendental knowledge or knowledge of bhakti at this location. Who knows how crowded it was, but at Dashashvamedha Ghat. And for those of you that were with us on Friday morning, the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that has the eight limbs of bhakti is found in the same section. It's you can see Madhyalila chapter 22. We recited text 100. If you remember, that's that verse. And this is a verse preceding that verse, and this is a section where it's Lord Chaitanya instructing Sanatana Goswami about devotional service. The title of the chapter is Explanation of Devotional Service. So how does devotional service begin? Well, devotional service begins by associating with those that are carrying bhakti in their heart. Here's the verse. Krishna bhakti janma mulva haya sadhu sangha Krishna prema janme tenho puna mukya anga. And the translation Prabhupada gave, the root cause of devotional service to Lord Krishna is sadhu sangha, association with advanced devotees. And then second line, even when one's dormant love for Krishna, even when you attain the Krishna Prema stage, association with devotees is still most essential. Puna mukhya anga. Still. So devotional service in the beginning, devotional service in the end, and that means every place in between too. We require association of devotees. Interesting. Sharing in the period of a week. It's last past week. In two home programs, where there was the host had a teenage boy, Indian family. Teenage boy in an Indian family, and the parents want me to answer the question. Their teenage boy asks them, "Why go to the temple?" Why do you have to go to the temple? So I gave a philosophical answer that I knew they weren't going to, like, you know, feel comfortable with, so I gave a visual picture. And they oh, okay, I get it. The visual picture is it, the preamble was, we do stuff at home, and why do we can just do stuff at home, why do we have to go to the temple? So I gave the example of some coals. You have a fire, and fire kind of burns for a while, and then you have some coals here and some coals there, and they're glowing, but the fire has gone out. So you take those coals and move them closely together, and a little bit of fanning, and what happens? Fire comes out. The glowing capacity becomes more intense, up to a flame. And they said, okay, I get it. That's why devotee association is why we go to temple and take the association of devotees. Because separate, there's still some glowing, but it's not the fire of devotional service. The same. Just like, you know, these wonderful, the whole weekend, the wonderful kirtans in particular, and, you know, the deity worship and so on and so on. It's just very, very wonderful. In the beginning, in the middle, in the end. It's very valuable. So going now, I'm going to go backwards, forwards to that text 100 that has the six limbs of devotion, and some verse that's just before that, text 97, this is the author, Krishna Das Kaviraj, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, speaking about the impetus for surrender to Krishna before he gives the limbs of surrender is by knowing Krishna's qualities. If you know Krishna's qualities, well, you hear from the devotee about Krishna's qualities. And when you understand Krishna's qualities, you want to surrender to him. Here's what Krishna Das Kaviraj writes. Whenever an experienced person develops real knowledge of Krishna and his transcendental qualities, he naturally gives up all other engagements and renders service to the Lord. Uddhava gives evidence concerning this. So who is Uddhava? He's pictured here at the feet of Krishna. Uddhava was so much dear to Krishna, even he looked like Krishna. His complexion looked like Krishna. His clothing even was like Krishna's. When Krishna sent Uddhava, we're going to hear about this in a little bit. Krishna sent Uddhava to go to Vrindavan with a message for the gopis that he would soon come. And when Uddhava came, he looked so much like Krishna, the gopis thought, Krishna's come back. They were a little disappointed when it wasn't Krishna. But they were happy that Uddhava reminded them of Krishna, even by looking so much like Krishna. And he was outside of Vrindavan, he was the most confidential associate of Krishna. We can think of different persons, like Arjuna, for example, dearmost friend of Krishna. Krishna chose to speak Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna because he was so dear to Krishna. But then there's another section in the Bhagavatam where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. It's called Uddhava Gita. And Uddhava's, as far as Arjuna is concerned, as far as Brihat Bhagavatamrita is concerned, Uddhava's even more confidential to Krishna in his relationship with Krishna than Arjuna. And Uddhava speaks the following verse. And I'm going to ask one of our youth that likes to study Prabhupada's books. Where's Prahlad? Is Prahlad here? Yes, Prahlad. Do you know who is Bhakti? Aho Bhakti Yam Stanakala Kutam?
No.
Bhakti?
No, Maharaj.
Do you know who is Bakasura?
Yes.
Who is Bakasura, please? Give him the microphone. Give this young man... Oh, he's got it. Okay. Who's Bakasura?
He's the bird demon.
The bird demon. Bird demon. And so his name is Baka. And this name here is Baki. And Baki means the sister of Baka. Yeah. And do you know who Baki is?
Putana.
Putana. Very good. Okay, so Paul, you can take the microphone. There. You get an A in your exam. Maybe A minus. Oh, Baki. So it's a very famous verse. If you just hearing these lines, when you're familiar with the Bhagavatam, hearing these this first line, it does something to your heart. Because it's Uddhava. The scene is, Krishna has just completed, I'll go back a little bit. Krishna, after the Kurukshetra battle was over and the Pandavas were restored the kingdom and Yudhisthira became the king and Bhishma Dev parted and all of that, Krishna went back to Dwarka. And when Krishna went back to Dwarka, the Pandavas knew Krishna's going to leave. His pastimes are completed. His purpose for coming to this world is now fulfilled. Krishna's going to leave. So they sent Arjuna with Krishna all the way from Hastinapur all the way back to Dwarka to get like what's going on, what's up. And Arjuna didn't come back. So they knew why he didn't come back. But they didn't want to say it. But Krishna told Uddhava, I'm going to complete my pastimes very soon, and I don't want you to be alone. I want you to be with my devotees, because association with devotees is essential. So go to the Himalayas where the Nara Narayan Rishi and his devotees are, and be with them, because then you'll be all right. So Uddhava didn't want to leave Krishna. He didn't want Krishna to leave, but Krishna gave him an instruction, so he started to leave. But he couldn't complete the journey. He came back. And by the time he came back, Krishna had left Dwarka. So he went mad, searching for Krishna, just like the gopis, searching for Krishna, you know, throughout all of India. It wasn't even just in Vrindavan. He's just like looking for Krishna. And he wasn't an FBI agent or something. He's just searching for Krishna. Madly searching for Krishna. And all the way from Dwarka, finally, he found Krishna in Vrindavan, in a forest, underneath a young banyan tree, leaning against the tree, a young banyan tree, with his arms stretched down to his knees and his dhoti stretched out beneath him. And Uddhava went running and fell at Krishna's feet, crying and crying. I couldn't leave. I couldn't go to Narayan Rishi's ashram. So then this long section of the 11th canto Bhagavatam comes where Krishna narrates to Uddhava wonderful teachings, very elevated teachings. And then Krishna leaves. He said, I'm leaving now. You will not see me again. And he left. And he gave Uddhava some service so he could maintain his life to go to Naranarayan Rishi and tell them all that I've told you, because I came into this world to give association to my devotees, but I didn't make it there, so you go as my representative. You're my ambassador to Naranarishi's ashram. And shortly after Krishna left, Vidura arrived. And Vidura started asking all these questions about Krishna. Oh, Vidura! Uddhava! What are you doing here? How nice to see you. How is everybody in Dwarka? How is Krishna and Balaram, etc., etc.? Just question after question. And that's just, he hit Uddhava's Krishna button. And he just went on for like a chapter and a half just talking about Krishna. And this is one of his first verses where he says, how wonderful it is. Putana, the sister of Bakasura, wanted to kill Krishna by smearing deadly poison on her breast and having Krishna take it. Nonetheless, Lord Krishna accepted her as his mother, and thus she attained the destination befitting Krishna's mother. Of whom should I take shelter but Krishna, who is most merciful? This is a pastime when Krishna was just a baby, like literally infant, just a few days old, in his pastime, of course, because he's eternal. And Putana came to kill him. And Krishna accepted, because she came like a mother, he accepted her as mother and liberated her, and she got a position in the spiritual world as an associate of Mother Jasoda in Goloka Vrindavan. So, who can be a better master than Krishna? For such a person as Putana, who came with wicked intention, and Krishna gave her a place in the spiritual world, because just a little bit of service, acting as mother. Who could be a better master than Krishna? So when we have knowledge of Krishna's qualities, then taking shelter and surrendering unto Krishna becomes facilitated very much. So this is text 97 and 98. Now going back two more verses, same idea. We know Krishna's qualities, it's impetus to surrender to Krishna. The author of Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Lord Krishna is very kind to his devotees. He is always very grateful and magnanimous, and he possesses all abilities. A learned man does not give up Krishna to worship anyone else. It's not possible. Because through association of devotees, one can understand the qualities of Krishna. And understanding the qualities of Krishna, it's not possible to give up Krishna. And the person who spoke the verse that's just going to be quoted is Akrura. Prahlad, give that young man the microphone. Question two. Can you tell us something about Akrura?
He was ordered by Kamsa to take Krishna.
He did what?
He was ordered by Kamsa to take Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura.
Yeah. So, that's the service that he did. And what was his relationship with Krishna?
He was his uncle.
Uncle. He's a member of the Yadu dynasty. Or if you're from Canada, it's dynasty. And he was elder, as you see with his beard and stuff. So he was like his father's brother, although he was actually even older than that. Significantly older than that. Shishi Kishore Kishori Kita. This is an artist painting of Akrura when he went in the chariot provided for him by Kamsa to go from Mathura to Vrindavan to bring Krishna to Mathura. He was just meditating. There's a whole chapter on the chariot ride, and his thoughts, meditating on what it's going to be like when he sees Krishna, how he'll be dressed. His peacock feather will be like this, and his dhoti will be like that, and dust from the hooves of the cows will be on his ashen face, and just meditating on the form of Krishna. And then he was saying, Krishna will smile like this, and I will say like this, and he was in a trance of meditating on meeting Krishna. And then when he saw the footprints of Krishna in Vrindavan, he lost it. He just fell out of the chariot and started rolling on the ground and calling out Krishna's name in jubilation. This is an ecstatic devotee. So this verse is spoken much later, and the verse translation reads, Ukura speaking to Krishna, My dear Lord, You are very affectionate to your devotees. You are also a truthful and grateful friend. Where is that learned man who would give you up and surrender to someone else? You fulfill all the desires of your devotees, so much so that sometimes you even give yourself to them still. You neither increase nor decrease by such activity. So we're going to spend, this is Saturday night, so we're going to just give a little Bhagavat discussion about Krishna's entering into Mathura, because a very important person is mentioned at the beginning part. He met a washerman and then a weaver as servants of Kamsa, and then Trivikra, that she's pictured here. She was called Trivikra because she was a hunchback, bent in three places. Trivikra. And she wasn't specifically, Shukadeva Goswami says, she wasn't a pious person. She was a servant of Kamsa. And she hadn't done piety. Her service for Kamsa, every day she would bring fragrances, scented water, scented oil, sandalwood paste, and provide that for Kamsa so he could, you know, smell nice, I guess. Maybe he didn't smell so good or something. So she was carrying this tray of fragrances to Kamsa, and she saw Krishna and Balaram, and she approached Krishna and Balaram and said, "This is perfectly appropriate for you." And she gave sandalwood paste on their forehead and gave some scented oil, smeared scented oil on their body. And, you know, she was really happy that you're the right recipient of these special things. But Krishna was so pleased with her very simple devotion that he put one toe on her toe and the tips of his fingers under her chin and boop, just straightened her. She was a hunchback for her whole life, and then all of a sudden she's not a hunchback anymore. And the scripture describes that Kubja, another name is Trivikra or Kubja, she's an expansion of Krishna's Bhu Shakti. Now, some of our newer devotees don't know what that means. There's internal potency of Krishna. And it has three features, Sri Bhu and Nila. So Bhu Shakti is one of Krishna's internal potencies, and this lady Kubja was, for Krishna's purpose of Krishna's pastimes, served as an expansion of her. And when she got straightened out, she looked very beautiful, and she was just gazing at the beauty of Krishna's form, and Krishna could understand what that look meant. And Krishna said, "I'll come back again later." And he did. "I'll come back again later and we will see one another again." So Krishna continued in his journey. Several things happened, and at night they went back outside the wall, or the city wall of Mathura, and spent the night. This is just like a campsite, and they've got tents and they're lying down in the ground, and there's their cows and the bullock cart. Nanda Maharaj had also come bringing his annual taxes for the king. Then in the morning, Krishna entered into the main gate, and awaiting him at the main gate was this humongous, intoxicated, wild elephant being prodded with the goads of the elephant trainers. The plan was trample Krishna to death. That was Kamsa's plan. Something else happened. Krishna stepped out of the way of the elephant, grabbed his trunk, and slung him to the ground and smashed Kuvayapida. And stepped on his body and broke off his tusks and started smashing him with his own tusks. Kuvayapida was finished. And Balaram broke off the other tusk, and the two boys went striding with bloody-ended elephant tusks over their shoulder. entering into the wrestling arena of Kamsa, because the plan that Kamsa had was his very powerful wrestlers, Chandura and Mushtika, would defeat Krishna and Balaram. But you know, these are professional wrestlers, and Krishna is just a little over 12 years old boy. And you know, everyone in the audience felt, this is unfair match. How horrible. Look at Kamsa, really, he really wants to see how the wrestlers are going to do. He wants Krishna destroyed. He's afraid of Krishna. And Chandra and Mushtika had three brothers who are pictured back here. That's Krishna's chadar. Here's a close-up. Here's an even closer close-up. Perspiration coming down the forehead of Chanura. And guess who won? Krishna defeated him. Then Mushtika was defeated by Balaram. Then the three brothers attacked the two brothers at once, and they were finished. And then the description in Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna was looking out of the corner of his eye up at that place where Kamsa was sitting, and he jumped up and grabbed Kamsa by the hair and threw him to the ground and thrashed him soundly. Krishna, with one fist raised, holding his shoulder, close up. Balaram looks really nonchalant there. The cowherd boys, they really want to make sure that Krishna wins. Guess who won? And everyone was so afraid because Kamsa was so powerful and wicked and merciless. They thought maybe just knocked out and not dead. So Krishna grabbed him by the hair and just dragged him around the wrestling arena like a wet rag. So they knew that Kamsa was dead. So he threw some confetti, it looks like. And the first thing that Krishna did was he went to find his mother and father. Krishna and Balaram went to the prison house of Kamsa and freed Vasudeva and Devaki in a very beautiful scene, the reunion of these two, because those of you that are parents, they have been separated from their child since the very evening he was born, and it's 12 years later, they haven't seen him, worried about him, hearing about him, the dangers that Krishna underwent. Who can imagine what their emotions were? Again, reunited with Krishna and Balaram. Krishna said something very sweet. He said, I was afraid of Kamsa. I didn't come back to be with you because I was afraid Kamsa might hurt me. But I had to come and rescue you, so I came anyways, and now we're together again. He was covering them with his words and his yogamaya potency. Actually, there's a scene that's described when they first came before Devaki and Vasudeva. They understood how powerful Kamsa was, and they understood that Krishna had killed Kamsa. Then they understood, you're not an ordinary person. You're God. But Krishna wanted to be embraced by them, not to be looked at with awe and reverence. And so Krishna covered them with his yogamaya potency. They forgot he was God and embraced him and smothered them with their tears and all things that parents do with their little children. So what's the first thing that Krishna did? He reinstated Ugrasena on the throne, and then he went to school. Because he was 12 years old, he hadn't even been to school yet. So he went to the school of Sandipani Muni. And we heard about the school of Sandipani Muni and his dear friend, whose name was? Sudama Brahman. We heard about Sudama Brahman this morning. And along with learning everything from Sandipani Muni in 64 days, it was a short school. Then he graduated. He learned all the Vedas and the six corollaries and all the 64 arts and everything that a Brahmana can teach them. So they then presented themselves to Sandipani Muni and said, we'd like to offer some dakshin. Is there something that you would like from us? And Sandipani Muni said, well, I can understand you're not ordinary persons. And so there is a request. My son went to Prabhas Kshetra, which is not far from where Sandipani Muni school was, and he didn't come back. And some say he drowned in the ocean, but nobody really knows. Could you bring my son back? So Krishna and Balaram went to Prabhas. They called the ocean personified. And this time, instead of like what happened with Ramchandra, he came. And he said, well, the Panchajana, a demon that lives within the ocean, he came and he swallowed your son. But if you go find him, maybe you can get the son back. So Krishna and Balaram dove deep into the ocean. They found Panchajana. He was in the form, there's different descriptions, but in the form of a conch. They smashed him. The child was not there. But then Krishna took the Panchajanya, those of you that know that name from Bhagavad Gita, or you've seen the cover, Krishna's blowing his conch shell, named Panchajanya, that's where he got it. That's a long description by our acharyas. So then he wanted to find Sandipani Muni's son. So he took his Panchajanya conch shell to the abode of Yamaraj and gave a real strong blast on his conch shell. And Yamaraj, who was a devotee of Krishna, came at once and he was so happy. Krishna's come to this godforsaken place. Is there some service for you? Yes. I'd like the son of Sandipani Muni, please. Can you arrange that? So he did. He arranged that. He brought in the very same form. It's specific in the Bhagavatam. As Sandipani Muni's son looked when he was disappeared there. Prabhas Kshetra, by the shore of the ocean. So Krishna and Balaram returned to Sandipani Muni's ashram and returned his son and said, Sandipani, would you like something else? Like, ready for duty, sir. And Sandipani Muni said, there's nothing else I could possibly want. Having both of you as my students and just even seeing you is the perfection of life. There's nothing else I could possibly desire. So Krishna returned with Balaram back to Mathura. Now again, they're with Vasudeva and Devaki. But Krishna's concerned about the residents of Vrindavan, because remember, Akura took Krishna from Vrindavan, and Krishna knows, because he's omniscient, he knows what they're feeling. They're feeling terrible separation from him. So he decides to give his dear friend Uddhava, by the way, Uddhava was with him always, so Uddhava came to be with Krishna, and Krishna sent Uddhava on a mission, twofold mission. One, take a letter to the gopis to tell them very soon I will come. I have to stay here for some time, pacify my relatives. After all, I've been away for 12 years, and then I'll come back. And I know the feelings that you're feeling, because I'm feeling those same feelings. Your love for me and my love for you are the same. Soon I will come. So it was to pacify the gopis. But it was a second purpose, which was to introduce Uddhava, his dearmost associate outside of Vrindavan, of the love in Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan have a very, very special quality of love. So Uddhava, whose picture we saw earlier with Krishna, went to Vrindavan with this message. And when he went, he saw the gopis were just in a state of madness in their feelings of separation from Krishna. And here he is in the background. He's reading Krishna's letter. And I left something upstairs. Could you get, it's that printout with the binder along the side? Yeah, you got to walk a little faster. So right here is a little bumblebee. While Uddhava is reading this letter from Krishna, Radharani's going mad, insulting the bumblebee. Radharani's talk with the bumblebee is a very famous part of Srimad Bhagavatam. She starts insulting the bumblebee. And by insulting the bumblebee, she's insulting Uddhava, saying, "What kind of a creature are you? We know what bees do. They sit on one flower and gather some honey, and then they go to the next flower and gather some honey, and they don't care at all about the flower. You're just like that. And your master is just like that too. He comes and enjoys with different gopis, and then he goes away. He doesn't really care about us. You're an unreliable servant of an unreliable master. Get out of here." And on and on and on, and talking madness. And on and on and on. And then she goes, "Uh-oh, the bumblebee's gone. No, don't go tell Krishna all those things, because we know who he is. We know what he's like. But he's our life and soul. We can't live without him. And if you go tell him all those things, he may never come. Bumblebee, come back, come back." Meanwhile, Uddhava is just amazed at this quality of the love of Srimati Radharani. So Uddhava stays for some time, and he comes back, gives his report to Krishna about what his experience was. And Krishna understood. He understood before what would happen. So now he's still in Mathura. And he has given two promises. One promise he's given to Trivikra, who is the expansion of Krishna's Bhushakti. And with Trivikra, he said, "I will see you later. I'll come visit your home." So Krishna goes to her home, and she's so attracted by Krishna's beauty. Her impetus is the merciful nature of Krishna and the beauty of Krishna. And so she's shy but at the same time attracted. Krishna comes with Uddhava, and he has Uddhava right there, so no one will be talking Krishna's doing something bad. And she just wants to grasp Krishna's feet and get the blessings of Krishna's lotus feet. So Krishna gives his mercy that way. And then Krishna goes to see Akura, because by Akura's bringing Krishna to Mathura, when they parted, when they reached Mathura, Krishna said, "I'll come visit you." And Krishna fulfilled his promise, because Krishna keeps his promise. Like Masuchaha, like the 1866 Bhagavad Gita verse. "Don't worry, have no fear, Masuchaha. You will not, Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami Masuchaha. I'll free you from all sinful reactions by your surrender to me." There's no reaction by your surrender to Krishna. All reactions are taken away. Mahashuchaha. So Krishna kept his promise. And then Uddhava spoke the verse that we just read. "Krishna, you have all these wonderful qualities. You're such a master. You're such a person who would want to be associated with you in any other way." And Krishna speaks some very kind things to Akura. Said Akura, Krishna appreciated Akura's bhakti very much. And said, you're such an elevated person. By your presence, others will become sinless. So please freely give your association to others. You're such a great personality. Krishna had great regard. So Another impetus. For surrender to Krishna is hearing about him. Who is this painting of? Rukmini. Who is Rukmini? She's the daughter of the king of Vidarbha, or Vidarbhi, Vidarbhi, or also known as Rukmini. Bhishmaka is her father, and Rukmini is said to be an expansion of the goddess of fortune. In fact, it gets even more technical. Srila Jiva Goswami says that Rukmini is a plenary portion of Srimati Radharani. So it's built within the verse itself where she is spoken of in the Bhagavatam. So this happens a little later. Krishna has a few things have happened, not too many. After he meets with Akura, that the two wives of Kamsa go back to their father, Jarasandha. Daddy, our husband was killed. Krishna killed him. Do something. Take revenge. Surely I will take revenge. I take a vow. I will kill that person and destroy the whole Yadu dynasty. Get my armies together. We shall go at once. So Akura brings this huge, massive army. Krishna laughs and said, I'll take care of him myself. Comes on the battlefield, destroys everybody except one person, Jarasandha. Says, you can go home now. And he's so humiliated. He's thinking, just give up his life. And he gets back to his kingdom. His ministers say, no, it was just one of those things. You know how it's one of those things. And you're so powerful. You're Jarasandha. Go, Jarasandha, go. Get another army together. Krishna was thinking, this is a very good arrangement. I came into the world to kill the demoniac kings, and Jarasandha is bringing the demoniac kings so I can kill them. I'll just stay here in Mathura and fulfill the purpose of my appearance. He's doing a little seva. So many times that the same thing happened again and again and again and again. There's like the whole episode, and Kaliyavana comes, and Krishna then takes the residents of the Yadu dynasty that are living in Mathura and settles them in Dwarka. So then after that, Krishna goes to Dwarka. So Krishna is now in Dwarka. Very first thing, Krishna is in Dwarka, and Rukmini, first queen for Krishna to marry, Rukmini hears about Krishna, just like we hear about Krishna. So this is an impetus. Only something happened a little different for Rukmini than us. She wanted to marry Krishna. And so, there was a problem. You know, even Rukmini has a problem. Not only us. And the problem was, her father was really into it. Her father wanted her to marry Krishna. She had five brothers. Four of the brothers wanted her to marry Krishna. They were really into it. The older brother, Rukmi, said no. She shall not marry Krishna, she'll marry Shishupal. Rukmini had no desire at all to marry Shishupal. Yuck. She had given her heart to Krishna. So she's a princess. She's of royal lineage. She knows how to get things done. But, you know, she's in a woman's body, so she's, you know, has some limits. So what she did was, she wrote a letter to Krishna and sent a messenger with Krishna. Oh, here. Hearing of the beauty, prowess, transcendental character, and opulence of Mukunda, that's Krishna, from visitors to the palace who sang its praises, Rukmini decided that he would be a perfect husband for her. He sent this Brahmana messenger with Rukmini's letter. And I'm going to read to you. It's a beautiful letter. If you ever wanted to marry Krishna, you could. First, read Rukmini's letter. I hope I have it. I hope I have it. Oh, here it is. Yeah. So Krishna reads the letter. O beauty of the worlds, having heard of your qualities which enter the ears of those who hear and remove their bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion among men, you delight the minds of all mankind. What aristocratic, sober-minded, and marriageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband when the proper time has come? Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Impetus for surrender. Hearing about Krishna. Please come swiftly, O Almighty One, and make me your wife, my dear lotus-eyed Lord. Let Shishupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. She doesn't like Shishupal. If I have sufficiently worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead by pious works, sacrifice, charity, rituals, and vows, and also by worshipping the demigods, brahmanas, and gurus, then may Gadagraja come and take my hand, not Damu Gosha's son, that's Shishupal's father, or anyone else. Oh, unconquerable one, tomorrow, when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive. She gives him like the strategy how to do it too. She's really good. You should arrive unseen in Vidarbha and surround yourself with leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaija and Magadendra and marry me in the Rakshasa style, winning me with your valor. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit Goddess Girija. That's Durga. O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I can obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have become weak from the severe penances I will perform then. After hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. Pretty good letter, huh? So Krishna smiles. He tells the messenger, take the message back, Rukmini, I'll be there. Just as she indicated, tell her I'll be there. So Rukmini is seeing the messenger coming down the path and very expectantly, because this is just like within 24 hours this whole thing is going to happen. And she's kept in an inner chamber, but now she's going to go out of the inner chamber to the palace of Durga. And when she goes, lo and behold, here comes Krishna riding on a chariot, knocks everybody out of the way and grabs the hand of Rukmini, places her on the chariot, and takes off. Look at those horses. Woo. Specifically, the verse says he reached and touched her hand. And the assistants of Rukmini are wondering, hey, what's going on? And Krishna drives away, taking Rukmini. And as they're traveling, the soldiers from Vidarbha's palace, especially Rukmi and his friends, they're chasing after Krishna in their chariots, and there's all these arrows, and Rukmini doesn't look at all bothered. She's very happy to be with Krishna. And Krishna escapes, of course, and then, of course, Krishna marries Rukmini, his first queen. And so, impetus is hearing about Krishna. So we should hear about Krishna. Hear with a special kind of heart. Appreciate his qualities, his beauty, his compassion, his kindness, and all of his other wonderful qualities. And not just like it's a storybook, but it's he's our eternal lovable object. Then there's another impetus, and that's in the case of Sudama, not Sudama Brahman this time, but Sudama the florist. Very nice description. Sudama lived in Mathura city, and what do florists do? They gather flowers, and then they sell the flowers that they've gathered. So he heard that there's a really special place very nearby in Vrindavan. There's lots of nice flowers. So he went to gather some flowers in Vrindavan. And one day, when he was gathering flowers, lo and behold, he saw Krishna with Balaram, the cowherd boys, and the cows. And he was stunned just seeing Krishna. He didn't gather too many flowers that day. He was just absorbed in seeing Krishna. So regularly he would go to Vrindavan and just from a distance just see Krishna. So he had developed desire to surrender to Krishna. He actually was praying that may Krishna one day come to my door. There's the description in, I forget which scripture it is, that in his previous life he was a gardener, that every day he was a devotee of Krishna. In his previous life, Krishna hadn't appeared yet, but every day he gathered 500 flowers, every day, and placed 500 flowers at the altar of Lord Shiva with his prayer that one day, may I have the personality of Godhead Krishna come to my home. And he did that every day. So his desire was fulfilled when Krishna came to his home. He said, everything has been fulfilled just by your entering into my home. And his devotion was so strong, so like with Kubja, his devotion was so strong. But his was built up over a period of time. In fact, more than one lifetime. Krishna said, you please me so much by your devotion. Ask anything that you like. He said, just seeing you is what I wanted. But since you've asked, then I ask that I'll always be engaged in some service to you lifetime after lifetime. I'll always have the association of your devotees, so from them I can hear about you. And I'll always have a friendly disposition towards all living entities. That's my prayer. Very beautiful. So by hearing about Krishna, by seeing Krishna, then in Bhagavad Gita, this is quiz time for Bhagavad Gita, an impetus for entering to Krishna is knowing Krishna's position. So I'm going to give you, please raise your hand. Don't just blurt it out. What is the message that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita 7:19? I see one hand over there. What's the verse?
Bahunam jaymanam ante. Jnanvam mam prapadyate Vasudev Surati Samatma Sadullaba.
And the verse means?
After many, many lifetime, the person who is in knowledge, he surrendered to Krishna, considering him the cause of all causes.
So knowing that Krishna, Vasudev Sarvam Iti, Krishna is the cause of everything. Samahatma Sadullaba. That person will surrender to Krishna. It's very, very rare to find such a person. Then somebody else, Bhagavad Gita, a little more difficult, 10:7. Hint, it's just before 10:8. And 10:8 is the first of the Chatur Shloki verses. So what's 10:7? Anybody know that one?
Etam vibhutim cha yogam cha mama yoveti tattvataha.
Yeah.
Sovikalpena yogena. I can't remember the last line.
I don't either. Huh? So the verse, thank you. Very good. That was the most difficult one of all. Almost. So, Krishna says, one who knows in truth this vibhutam, because the chapter is vibhuti yoga, these opulences and this mystic power of mine, one who knows my position, he'll surrender it to me. And then, of course, 10:8 Bhagavad Gita, a lot of hands go up. Let me see a lot of hands go up. We'll call on you if your hand goes up, so you better know. Look at that, Prahlad knows. We're going to move you up from an A minus to an A. Stand up and say,
Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarva pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita.
And the translation? Uh-oh.
No. Like the Lord is all causes, everything emanates.
I'm the source of everything. Everything comes from me.
The wise who perfectly know this worship me with all their hearts.
There we go. The wise who perfectly know this. So by knowing Krishna position, the wise who perfectly know this, what do they do? Prahlad, what do? Engage in his devotional service, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They surrender to Krishna. You know who Krishna is. You surrender to Krishna. Okay, one more. And see, I didn't even put the Sanskrit because I knew you would know this one. 15:19. Hint, it comes after 15:15. 15:15 is a very famous verse. Sarvasya chaham radhi sannivishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. Vedaishta sayavaya aham eva vejo vananta kritved. So Krishna is in the heart of every living being. And from him comes knowledge, remember, and forgetfulness. So he's very, very special amongst all living entities. He's the supreme living entity, situated in the heart of all living entities. Huh?
I remember the...
It's where the chapter, the title of the chapter of the verse comes from. It's Purushottama Yoga. Here's the Sanskrit. Yomam evam asambudho janati purushottama. So persons who know that Krishna's position is that he is the purushottama, purusha uttama, the supreme person. Those persons who know his position will surrender to him and engage in his loving service. And there's other verses. If you know Krishna's position, so knowledge of Krishna's position, read Bhagavad Gita, it's impetus to surrender to Krishna. I just had this experience just about a week ago. I was in Orlando, Florida, and there's a little temple in Orlando, Florida, and the person that's in charge of that temple, the president, is Trivikram Swami. He's a god brother who was, he took sannyas. I was at the place where he took sannyas, Prabhupada to sannyas. And we were college students together. We didn't know each other so well as college students. We went to the same college. And I was just describing, because somebody asked, how I started Krishna consciousness. And I went through this little explanation that I had read 7 translations of Bhagavad Gita before I even had Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Because I thought it was something, you know, special, but I couldn't understand it. And I got 5 of them from the library because 2 people independently gave me 2 other translations. And Trivikrama Swami sat up and said, I did the same thing. Said, but I was going from, you know, somebody gave me a Bhagavad Gita. I said, no, it can't be. So I was going to prove it's wrong. And I ended up, I was convinced it was right. But he read four, and the four he read, he couldn't understand it. Then he got Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and then it was easy to understand. Same thing. So, association, back to the first message, sadhu sangam. You need association of devotees, and through association of devotees that can teach you Krishna's position, this impetus to surrender. Then there's another impetus to surrender, and that's you want something from Krishna. Then you surrender to Krishna. And there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna speaks about that. Mukunda, do you know that verse? Sure. Chatravidha Bhajante, two kinds of pious people surrender unto me. They want this, that, and the other thing. Huh? Okay. So, Paul, you know the verse. Oops. Artho, here we go. It's right on the screen. Artho jigyasu artarti gyani cha paratarshava. Four types of pious people. Impious people, that's another story. Four types of pious people, when they want something, they go to God because He's the order supplier. He fulfills what they want. So the four categories are, they're distressed, or they want some economic improvement, or they're curious, or they want knowledge. I want. So you want something, you may surrender to Krishna because you want something. And this is concluding, just two slides and we're done. Dravida's not here, but these are two verses that he quoted, and so I just wanted to honor Dravida and say it a little slower than he did because he quotes verses really fast. This is spoken by Uddhava to Krishna in this Uddhava Gita section of the 11th canto Bhagavatam. Dashtum janam sampaitam bilesmin kalahina kshudra sukhoru tarsham. I'm not Dravida. I can't recite verses like he recites verses. He spends hours every day just reciting verses. He's amazing. Here's the translation. Text 10. This is Uddhava speaking to Krishna about the impetus to surrender to Krishna. O Almighty Lord, please be merciful and uplift this hopeless living entity who has fallen into a dark hole of material existence where the snake of time has bitten him. Remember him quoting this? In spite of such abominable conditions, this poor living entity has tremendous desire to relish the most insignificant material happiness. He's being poked from behind. Remember that expression? And then being attracted by Krishna. Please save me, my Lord, by pouring down the nectar of your instructions, which awaken one to spiritual freedom. Such a nice verse. So, being poked from the backside and being drawn to Krishna from the front side. Go to Krishna because it's not nice on the backside and Krishna is very attractive. Let's go to Krishna, where spiritual existence becomes accessed by the instructions that come from Krishna to Uddhava. And then the final message here is another verse that he quoted from Prahlad Maharaj speaking to Lord Nrisimhadev. I believe I have the translation below. O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, And because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. That's the material circumstance. Although there are many remedies by which to get rid, to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Sounds like medicine. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. Impetus is recognizing our circumstance. Now, the nature of Maya is it's deluding us into thinking it's nice. Exactly as being said here, taking the regrettable, from the previous text, what Uddhava is saying, that one is regrettably trying to find just even the slightest little happiness in this pit of snakes or being bitten by the serpent of time. We're still trying to find happiness here. Pursuing happiness through fruitive activities where there is no happiness. Pursuing water in a desert where there's no water. Just a mirage. Very pitiable condition. So the remedy is engage in our natural position. So we require instructions. This impetus for submission or surrender is, and to go further and go further, is further instruction and further instruction. Going on practically forever, you know, learning the art of loving devotional service to Krishna, taking it very seriously, applying it in this mood of surrender. These are some examples of impetus for surrender. We can turn the light on, see if there's any discussion. Over here.
Hare Krishna. Does the impetus for surrender have any effect on our degree or quality of surrender, or is it enough to simply surrender regardless of the individual impetus?
Well, supposing it's like, you know, I want relief of distress. And what happens when the distress gets relieved? See you later, Krishna. Thanks a lot. It's been nice being with you. I got stuff, enjoyment to do. See you later. But it matters. We have to begin with whatever, wherever we are, but it does matter. The reciprocation comes according to the submission that we offer. Like Dravida was describing this principle of sankalpa. Those of you that attended his class, I was listening from upstairs. So the intention that we have is very important when we're engaged in devotional service. And then devotional service begins. That was the very first slide. The then devotional service begins means when it's unmixed, when it's beyond motivated. Ahoitakiya pratiyata yayatva supersedati. Okay? Something else? Right here?
Maharaj, we heard about the katha where Krishna went to Avantika with Sandipani Muni Rishi for his education. And he really heard about the glories of Krishna, that he learned everything in 64 days. And also that he followed the instruction of his guru for his dakshin. He actually did something that was impossible. He went to Yamraj and got his son. So my question is, what his spiritual master wanted was, the birth of his, to bring back his son again. What do our acharyas say about that? That's, to me, sounds like a material desire.
Yeah, it's a material desire. You have a son, you have two of them. You guys are material. Affection is natural, even, you know, maybe on the material side. But like, you know, Devaki, she lost her six sons. And she asked Krishna to bring back her six sons, so he did. But, you know, there's, in her case, because she's a pure devotee, her affection is the motherly affection of a pure devotee. And Sandipani Muni, you know, we know how to hook him up to a bhakti barometer and say how elevated is his bhakti. But, you know, the affinity for family members certainly is natural, and to a degree it's material. But it's, you know, it's a natural desire.
Well, so much, like we hear in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when the son died, well, when they were doing the kirtan, in the house of Srivastava Thakur, then he, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to bring
not only that, he didn't want anybody to cry because it might disturb the kirtan.
Right.
He said, if you keep crying, I'm going to drown myself in the Ganges, so stop crying. When his son had just died, because it will disturb Mahaprabhu's kirtan. That's Srivas. And, you know, he's more elevated devotee than Sandipani Muni, apparently. But, yeah. Supposing something happened to your sons. God forbid, but supposing something happened and you'd do anything to get to see to your son's welfare. That's the kind of father you are. So that's natural. It's not, we don't blame Sandipani Muni. He has affection for his departed son. Yeah, Prahlad.
Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, surrender unto me and leave everything to me. But it's sometimes hard for us to understand that in our day-to-day life, you know?
And day-to-day life?
It's hard to understand that. And like, even if things happen not for what we think is our benefit, like, we know, we come to know that we are told that everything is Krishna's desire, but sometimes
Wait a minute now. I don't know who told you that one. Krishna sanctions things doesn't mean that Krishna desires things. There's a big difference. Somebody jumps off a building. Krishna desired it. Krishna sanctioned it. But Krishna didn't desire it. So, now, you want to rephrase your question? Or does that answer your question?
Just my question.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, Mukunda? Prahlad, why don't you run the microphone so Subal can be relaxed.
Maharaj, I think ultimately you probably listed about 5 impetuses.
Yes.
So
impetai.
But when I look at it, I think you actually touched on this, but just a clarification. It seems like everything ultimately culminates in the mercy of the devotees.
Yes,
specifically.
And the mercy of Krishna is delivered through the mercy of Krishna's devotees. Like, you know, one of the verses said, you're so compassionate, even you give yourself. But that's also the consequence of the mercy of the devotees. Yeah. So don't lose the mercy of the devotees, whatever happens. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, my question is along...
Stand right by him.
Go ahead. My question is along the similar lines as Mukunda Prabhu's. I heard from devotees saying that the spiritual master has the right to give Krishna to a particular aspiring devotee.
He has a license.
He has the license. So in terms of when you discussed understanding the qualities of Krishna, since we say that the qualities of Krishna, the pastimes, the qualities of Krishna are transcendental. My question is, until and unless I see those qualities at first in my spiritual master, wouldn't I be able to understand them in the right context?
Well, what's your qualification to understand or see those qualities? So just imagine that you're covered. How are you going to see those qualities if you're covered? Answer, you won't, because you're covered. So it's not based upon seeing the qualities or something or other. It's based on something else. It's, you know, as you said, it comes back to what Mukunda said. There's mercy, and there must be faith in the devotees who are giving Krishna's mercy, that I trust the mercy, and because I trust the devotee who's giving the mercy. And then you act, and then you get some realization. A purification, then realization. We may need a lot of purification. Maybe our heart's very hard. We need a lot of purification. Maybe your heart is soft. You don't need so much. I know some people that are hard. I know some people that are soft. But, you know, yes, it's mercy is needed. So it's not first. I got my arms across my chest, and I'm saying, "Look, Krishna, you show yourself to me, then I'll have faith in you. I'll surrender to you. Go ahead, show yourself to me." Okay.
Maharaj, my intention was mainly that since we say the Lord's pastimes or qualities are transcendental, another way to phrase the question was how can I understand them in the right context?
In the right context?
Yeah.
I don't understand your question. How do you understand them in the right context? Just the context is the process of hearing from proper sources. Make sure you have a proper Srimad Bhagavatam with Bhaktivedanta purports. Then you're good. That's the right context. And, you know, in the association of devotees, that's another right context. All right?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have one question from yesterday's class. So it was discussed that, like, devotee should have faith that...
Speak slowly.
It was discussed yesterday that a devotee should have faith that Krishna will protect... So my question is that, like, what is that Krishna will protect? Like, one common understanding will be like this material body or my job or something.
No.
So what?
The body's going to perish.
Yeah.
Krishna will give you an eternal body.
Okay.
I mean, when this one drops, you may get an eternal one, but it's not, you know, you never get a bump or a bruise, or no one will ever say anything mean or nasty to you, and it's never going to get cold out. And never too hot either. Perfect climate. No, you know, just the right amount of rain, and only at night.
Okay. So like in the case of Abhimanyu and the sons of Draupadi, like Krishna protects means like once they leave this...
Your relationship, ultimately your relationship with Krishna is protected. Your Krishna consciousness is protected, ultimately. Now there may very well be other kinds of protection. And there may not be. Like, you know, Maharaj Parikshit was protected within the womb. But then later the snake bird came. So it's not always the body. But the orientation of the heart towards Krishna will be protected for his devotee. And, you know, extraordinary things do happen with even ordinary devotees. Their lives are saved when it could be destroyed. Krishna may do that. You know, to give you, you know, a wake-up call. Life is short. Anything could happen at any moment. And we know that, but unless something happens to us, we get turned upside down. Maybe we won't, like, it's too far away, we don't take it seriously. You follow?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you.
Okay. Way back in the corner.
Maharaj, in the same lines, Krishna is the maintainer. How do we understand that one?
How do you understand that one?
Yes.
How do you not understand that one?
I mean, should we be seeing in a material level that Krishna is maintaining all the entities?
Everything, there isn't something, say it the reverse, there isn't something that doesn't come from Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna, and Krishna maintains to whatever degree something is maintained. Now, supposing, let's say, you know, Jitendra is living a long life. He's been maintaining this building very nicely. But where does Jitendra get the ability to maintain the building? Krishna can take it away. He's using that maintaining the building capacity in Krishna's service. But it's Krishna that's maintaining the building. Etc. You know, you're working to, many persons here, working to maintain their family. So I'm maintaining my family. Where does the ability to work that maintains your family come from? Krishna is maintaining the family. And you're the servant of Krishna. On Krishna's behalf, this family is being maintained. I'm doing some service and Krishna's doing the maintaining. Etc. That's the consciousness, and specifically, it's the consciousness of a householder. You know, an irresponsible householder says, oh, Krishna's going to maintain, so I don't have to go to work. But the responsible person, Krishna's going to maintain, I have to be in Krishna's service. It's Krishna's the maintainer. It's the consciousness. It's Krishna that's the maintainer. Whatever one's position is. Does that help? It's a further question.
Yeah, in the same context, you know, when you explained about Krishna is the protector, he's not only protecting, in situations he'll protect, like Parikshit, he was protected in the womb, and you said he's also protecting our relationship. I was wondering if there's any spiritual dimension to maintenance also, apart from material maintenance.
Okay, nice question. Yeah, he maintains it. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. The maintaining is he maintains our Krishna consciousness. He maintains from the material side, whatever we need, you know, whatever our needs are, Krishna will take care of that. But part of our need is our relationship with Him. Ultimately, that's our real need. The other things we could have or not have, but that is essential. So he'll reciprocate with that. So even when we may think that we're alone, we're not alone. Krishna's in our heart. Krishna's with us. If we can be conscious of Krishna, we'll know that we're never alone. The feelings of loneliness that many people in the world, you know, one of Beatles' famous songs was about loneliness, lonely people. So many lonely people in this world because they've lost their Krishna consciousness. But when you're connected with Krishna, you're never alone. Yeah? From the ladies' side, anything?
Marge, when you were answering Prahlad's question,
yeah,
you had said that everything happens because Krishna sanctions those things, not necessarily because he desires them. Is that correct?
Anything that happens, it must be sanctioned by Krishna, otherwise it cannot happen. But that doesn't mean that Krishna wants everything that he sanctions.
Yeah. So, my question is, if we are in a certain situation, how do we know whether to surrender to that situation because Krishna desires it, or how do we know that we're just surrendering and he's just sanctioning it?
I guess it depends on the circumstance. If it's the one that I think you're thinking about. How do we know if Krishna wants it? Well, Well, one thing, you know, with every circumstance of life, including the one I think you're thinking about, every circumstance of life, there is something for us to learn in our relationship with Krishna. And so what Krishna may want is not necessarily this particular circumstance, but Krishna wants us to learn something, and it can be this circumstance or another circumstance, and it'll keep repeating, fortunately, although we may think it's unfortunately, until we learn the lesson that Krishna wants from us. So, rather than looking at the circumstance as, is this what Krishna wants or doesn't want, look at what's the lesson that Krishna would like me to learn from this circumstance. And it may not be easy to understand. Like Bhishma says to Maharaj Yudhisthira, it's not easy to understand the purpose of the Lord. But at the same time, it's not easy. It's a question that a devotee must ask. What is the intention of Krishna for me in this circumstance? What is it that Krishna wants from me? Wants me to learn and wants from me in this circumstance. So that's where your question should go. I mean, not just, you know, the immediate circumstances of life, but in speaking in general. And even if we don't know, even if it's not evident quickly or even over a period of time, it's a principle that, you know, the seek and ye shall find principle. If you don't ask the question, you'll never, if it's, the answer is banging on your head, you won't get the answer because you're not looking for the answer. Seek, as I said, I don't need to say it again. Krishna wants something from me, from you, from each of us. Krishna wants us to learn something about ourselves and about our relationship with Him. What is it that Krishna would like from us? Then you're in your relationship with Krishna. It may be less clear than you would like it, but you're in your acting, you're striving in your relationship with Krishna. And that's nice. And that can give one strength to endure all circumstances of life. I'm thinking, you know, in response to your question, there's a classic in situations of stress, like a stress management principle, whether it's whatever it is, it can be job or relationships or the world or life. Man's Search for Meaning, you know that book? It's a very well-known book by a Jewish man who was in a Nazi concentration camp. And, you know, he was in a really awful circumstance. It wasn't easy. It wouldn't be difficult that, you know, does God want this? Does Krishna want this? The people are in concentration camps and being tortured and killed, sent to a gas chamber every day in a really cruel way. Not that God wants that. Krishna wants that. But there's a lesson to be learned in that circumstance. And he learned a lesson, and, you know, it's a powerful lesson. You can choose, and one of his messages is, you choose, be free will is operative at every moment. You have the circumstance doesn't have to change, like being in a Nazi concentration camp or being whatever the circumstance is. That's not what's oppressive or what Krishna doesn't want. That the freedom is to choose how you're going to respond to that. So now how does Krishna want you to respond to this? Or that, or the other thing, circumstances of life. Um, Can you think of one person that you know? The answer is no. One person that there's no such thing as a circumstance in their life that's causing them some challenge or some difficulty or some trouble or something that's undesirable. Everyone has that. Remember that retreat we had in Gita Nagari? It was the Say Yes to Krishna retreat. Did you attend that one? You weren't there? You heard about it? So, like, you know, Krishna Leela stood in front and had everybody, you know, going, like, this many people. Okay, say something you don't like. You know, circumstance of life that, you know, like, it really bugs you. And, you know, once they got into the hang of it, they had, you know, post-its, those big, you know, flip chart things. It has some 10 of them, 12 of them, filled up real fast, having a laughing and laughing about things they don't like. And then, you know, that's say no to Krishna, then how do you say yes to Krishna? Say yes to Krishna doesn't mean I like the circumstance, but say yes to Krishna. So what does that look like? So, you know, they did role play. It was, anyway. What does Krishna want? Then say yes to Krishna. Not necessarily say yes to the circumstance, but say yes to Krishna. And then you're in a spiritually powerful position to properly address the circumstance in a way that would be pleasing to Krishna. Oh. He doesn't scream too loud. Sometimes he does. Okay, Prahlad? Is that okay? Okay.
Guru Maharaj, among the impetuses for surrender, it seems there's one, which is distress, surrendering to Krishna out of distress, or realizing that this material world is full of distress. It seems we want to, at some point, graduate out of that.
Yeah, and, just like your son. One day.
So the other impetuses, like being attracted to Krishna because of hearing of his qualities, you know, they seem to be more long-lasting or, you know, transcendental. Like you were explaining, once the distress is gone, then, you know, you don't have such an impetus to surrender anymore. Is that the correct understanding, that...
I've been really distracted by the crying child. I kept hearing him and I was like 60% over there and 40% over here.
I'm so used to it that I couldn't hear.
There's advantages to being a mother and disadvantages to being a sannyasi. And there's advantages to being a sannyasi and disadvantages to being a mother. We just have to find the right situation for ourselves. Okay, can you try again? You stop crying. Just take it from the top. I was like really distracted.
So among the impetuses for surrender, it seems there's one which is surrendering out of distress, or realizing that this material world is full of distress.
Yeah.
It seems at some point we want to graduate out of that, even if that is our initial impetus. To really go deeper in our surrender, it seems, you know, we need to come to one of those other, being attracted to Krishna.
Okay. So now how do we do that, is your question? Or when are we eligible for that? What's your question?
Two-part. One is that understanding correct, that is a more material versus the other seem more transcendental impetuses?
Well, and, you know, for Prahlad, it, as an example, you know, the distresses, it wasn't just a matter of, you know, hold on and endure he was transcendental. That, you know, the dualities of material life fade. As it then comes in, like, you know, the situation in Goloka, where there's distress, but it's distress in terms of their meeting or separation from Krishna. And then obstacles come along for their meeting with Krishna that look like a distress, but it's an increase of their attachment for Krishna. It increases and intensifies their love for Krishna when there's an obstacle. So it's for a materialist hearing such things, it may be either sound fanciful or it also looks like misery. But it's not. It's just varieties of happiness, varieties of intense love. So in other words, say the same thing in a different way. This is a reflection of that. And that's ecstatic, and this is miserable. It's a reflection of that. This may look like that, but it's not. Because here, it's all miserable, whether it's varieties of misery, you know, a lesser degree, like that example that that Uddhava was saying to Krishna, just holding on to a little piece of happiness in the midst of so much misery, and that looks like happiness to somebody. It's all miserable because it's forgetful of Krishna, and then when there's forgetfulness, there's remembrance of Krishna, it looks like misery, but it's ecstasy. So it's not exactly right. As you know, it's not, you paint it utopia and then I'll leave behind the misery and now it's utopia. But it's not utopia. The negation of this becomes what utopia is. It's not like that. It's not like that. It's all variegatedness. As here, so above. It's all variegated. But the variegated is with Krishna at the center. The real position of leaving misery behind, Prahlad is a very nice example, it's just remembrance of Krishna. When he was asked, Nrisimhadev hadn't even extended the benediction, but he knew he was going to ask. So, don't ask me for a benediction. And if there is, for me, I don't need anything because I just remember you and everything is taken care of. But there is one thing. The conditioned souls are suffering. That's my anxiety. So, it's just, it's a transcendental kind of happiness is to have compassion for others like Prahlad has, where it's not, it's a whole other paradigm, it's the spiritual paradigm. Does that address your question? Yeah? Okay. Are we done? Okay. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.